that right? Ready for chapter 11, but I hurriedly went over the compromises of Pharaoh, and I wanted to highlight those. I wanted to pull all four of them out and highlight them. So I'm going to do that tonight, and then I'm going to finish chapter 10 in relationship to that fourth compromise, and then talk about chapter 11. So will you open your Bibles to Exodus chapter 8, and we're going to pick up the first offer, the first compromise of Pharaoh. In the process of these miraculous plagues, of their unfolding, after the fourth plague, well, it really shortly before that, after the second plague, the magicians of Egypt were not able to duplicate what Moses and Aaron were doing. And so Pharaoh, by the time he gets through four of these, decides it's time for a rapprochement. His religious magicians were faltering and failing him. The impotence of his deities, even though they were so beautifully decorated and ornate, were not bringing him any solutions. And so, after the fourth plague, he decides, maybe we better make a compromise. So, he calls Moses in verse 25 of chapter 8 and says, go you, sacrifice to your God in the land. Okay? And Moses said, it is not meet to do so, for we shall sacrifice the abominations of the Egyptians to Jehovah our Elohim. Lo, now he answers the question sort of with the question, shall we sacrifice the abominations of the Egyptians before thy eyes, and will they not stone us? So compromise number one, the offer is sacrifice, but in the land. But in Egypt. Okay? Sacrifice, but in Egypt. Now, Moses' response is very rational. He says, hey, look, Egyptians hate what we're going to sacrifice. And the idea is simply this. If they would have sacrificed a heifer or some form of cattle, they would have violating the sacred deities of the Egyptian people. And so in that case, the Egyptians would have been agitated by what they would have been agitated in the sense that it would have been sacrilegious in their eyes if they'd have sacrificed cattle. Then if they would have sacrificed sheep or goats or something in that line, they would have been insulted. They would have said, hey, this is an insult to the deities because sheep were an abomination to the Egyptians. So any way that Moses would have, if he would have accepted this, he was trapped either way by what he would have sacrificed. And he fully expected that the wrath of the Egyptian people would have fallen upon him. Now I wonder where Pharaoh got the idea that to even offer that kind of a compromise. It was irrational, in other words. So Moses, in effect, just categorically rejects it. He says in verse 27, we will go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to Jehovah our God as he has commanded us. In other words, he says, no, we must follow. We have a categorical no, and the final reason for the no really is we must follow. We must follow Yahweh or Jehovah. And Jehovah has commanded that we go 3 days' journey in the wilderness. In other words, he says, we're going to stick to the word of the Lord. So immediately, almost as if it were planned, Pharaoh retaliates with a second compromise, a second offer in verse 28 and 29 of chapter 8. And I'm just wondering if some of his religious leaders might have been behind some of this. And Pharaoh said, I will let you go that you may sacrifice to the Lord your God in the wilderness, only you shall not go very far away. Entreat for me. Okay? So the second one is sacrifice, but not too far away. Not too far from Egypt. Now, normally, in ancient times, and I would assume it would be true in this one, in the time of Christ it's true, a day's journey was about 20 miles. So if they were going to go 3 days, we could say they were going to go 60 miles. Well, that doesn't seem very far to us, but it was far in that time. And so Perio says, no, I'll let you go, but I won't let you go very far. And apparently, see, he has in mind, and we have indication of this throughout these miracles, he has in his mind the idea that there's some type of revolution at hand, that these people really want to do evil, that they want to do evil to Egypt. And so he's not going to let them get where they're going to have too much independence. So apparently he wants to have his armies keep an eye on them. So Moses is going to reject this again categorically. Verse 29, and Moses said, behold, I go out from thee. I will entreat the Lord that the swarms of flies may depart from Pharaoh for his servants and from his people tomorrow. But let Pharaoh deal deceitfully any more in not letting the people go to sacrifice to the Lord. And it, apparently Moses in this one, you don't have a categorical rejection. At least you don't have any in the text of Scripture. But apparently he just rejects it. And he does, he entreats, and the flies depart. And in verse 32 it says, Pharaoh hardened his heart. At this time also, neither would he let the people go. Okay? So, the idea is implied rejection. Moses is going to stick to this 3-day journey concept throughout because that's what he was commanded to do by the word of the Lord. He's going to stay with it. Okay? Okay, so the Lord figures Pharaoh needs just a few more pointed illustrations of the fact that he better get with the program. So he gives him another one in chapter 9, and then another one in chapter 10. And then in verse 8 of chapter 10, we have the next compromise. 10 and verse 8. Okay. He has just been warned about the plague of the locusts. He has seen the destruction of the hail and fire. He has felt the impact of the running sores. He has seen much of the domestic animal life of Egypt gone, and he now is warned about the plagues. And so he has them ushered in. He figured out a way that maybe he can get rid of them and get rid of all of this problem and satisfy them and satisfy himself. So he offers them a compromise. Verse 8, go serve the Lord your God. But who are they that shall go? And Moses says, well, we're all going to go. Young, old, sons, daughters, flocks, herds. For we must. It's a categorical imperative that we hold this feast to Jehovah. And he said unto them, let the Lord be so with you. If I let you go, and your little ones, look to it, or behold, for evil is before you. You plan something evil for us, like maybe depriving us of your labor force, complete expatriation of your people. Not so. Go now, you that are men. Now the word here that is used for men is the word hanavarim. And a hanavarim means an adult male. So the offer in the third compromise is really go, but only adult males. And there may have been a lot of rationale around that. He said, well, you know, after all, the little kids, they don't understand what this is all about anyhow. And if we leave the little ones here, their mothers are needed with them. So you go, you men can go, but leave the children and the wives here. Okay? You catch the subtlety of this. There's no way that if Jehovah wanted to release them or get them out of there totally, that he could do anything with their wives and children back there. Okay. Serve the Lord, for that you did desire. Well, that isn't what Moses said. He wanted everybody to go. And they were driven, you'll notice. Again, we have no indication in the text that there was a refusal, except the fact that they were driven from Pharaoh's presence. So you have an implied rejection, categorical, no compromise, and they are driven out from Pharaoh. Okay. The fourth compromise. The fourth offer comes in the latter part of verse 10, okay? Or chapter 10. The plagues are almost finished. The darkness has come and gone, apparently. And Pharaoh calls Moses in. And I think, I'm going to show you something here in the text as we move on, but I think that during the plague of the darkness, the Lord must have revealed to Moses what the last plague was going to be. There's going to be one more, is what he's going to say. Only one more. And we'll have indication of that in the text. And so the darkness has come, the plague of the darkness, the ninth one, it's gone. And Moses is called in to Pharaoh. He has a private interview now in verse 24 through, the compromise comes in chapter 10, the last part, 24 through 29. And then the King James, not just the King James, but chapter divisions came in about the 12th century A.D. The chapter division comes right in the middle of the interview. It kind of screws it up. Let's look at the compromise, and then I'll show you how the text flows, okay, into the 11th chapter. Pharaoh called unto Moses and said, "Go you, serve Jehovah, only let your flocks and herds be stayed. Let your little ones also go with you." So in other words, he says, go, but take no sacrifice. I'll let everybody go, but you can't take the means of worship. Every one of these are some subtle little adjustment to what Jehovah had asked for. Absolutely. I would imagine if you had something like this today and evangelicals were offered some of these compromises, they would all be rejoicing that their prayers were answered, that somehow that God had softened the heart of the ruler of the land. But Moses is too sharp for that kind of naive attitude. Moses says in verse 25, "You must give us also sacrifices and burnt offerings, that we may sacrifice unto Jehovah our God." There's no other way of approach. "Our cattle also shall go with us. There shall not be an hoof left behind, for thereof must we take to serve Jehovah our God, and we know not with what we must serve the Lord until we come thither." Okay, now the intervening. Here is the climaxing part of the hardening. "And the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he would not let them go. And Pharaoh said unto him, Get thee from me, take heed to yourself, see my face no more, for in that day thou seest my face, thou shalt die." Now that is an empty threat by Pharaoh. The next time he calls Moses in, he's not going to kill him. He is going to ask him to leave the country and take all the people with him. It's an empty threat. But he's very angry, because Moses has categorically rejected his compromise. Okay, so we have a categorical no to the offer. Now Moses is angry. His heat is up. Moses says, "Thou hast spoken well, rightly, correctly. I will see your face again no more." I like the expression of these two verses. Look at verse 11, how awkward it is. "And the Lord said unto Moses, Yet will I bring one plague more upon Pharaoh and upon Egypt. Afterwards he will let you go hence. When he shall let you go, he shall surely thrust you out hence altogether." Now that is awkward, because that's one of those infinitive constructs in Hebrew, where you have a tremendous emphasis on the fact of the action. It's like the one you have in Genesis in chapter 2, verse 7, where the Lord says, "In the day you eat thereof, dying you shall surely die." Here he says, "When he lets you go, He shall surely thrust you out hence altogether, which literally says, when he shall send you out from here, wholly or entirely, he shall surely drive you out from here. Three times he repeats it. Listen to this literally, okay? In Hebrew 11:1. After that, he will send you away from here. When he shall send you out from here entirely or wholly, he shall surely drive you out from here. The idea is you're going to be gone and you don't have anything to worry about. He's going to want you to be as far away from him as you can get. Now, I want to tell you something. If Moses had accepted any one of those compromises, he wouldn't have had a promise like that. He would have screwed up the whole deal. See? There's a beautiful flow emanating from this tenth compromise. Let me see if I can diagram it for you just a little bit. Okay? We're at the final compromise. There's only going to be one more plague. And Moses apparently knows it. I'll show you that in just a minute. Okay, the idea is this. Here you have the fourth compromise, 10, 24 through 9. The fourth compromise. Okay, that fourth compromise flows like this. First, the compromise is given. Moses says, sorry about that, we can't accept it. So that in 10:28, we have an empty threat. An empty threat by Pharaoh. Okay. If you mark your Bible, you might put in 12:31 here, Exodus 12:31. Pharaoh calls Moses in and asks Israel to leave. So the next time he sees him, he really doesn't kill him. Okay? Okay, you have a response in 10:29 by Moses. See, the flow is moving now. The thought is moving. You have a response by Moses. And the response by Moses is simply, okay, it's okay with me. I'll probably never see you again. Okay? Then in 10:1, this is a flashback, most likely, to a promise. 11:1. Flashback to Yahweh's or Jehovah's promise. Okay. And it is an infinitive construct, emphatic. Infinitive construct, which means it's emphatic. Now, verse 1 would probably best read, and the Lord had said unto Moses. I'll show you why in a minute. Yet will I bring one plague more upon Pharaoh and upon Egypt. Afterwards he will let you go hence, or after that plague, he will send you away from here. Literally, when he shall send you away from here entirely, or with everybody, with everything, he shall surely drive. He's going to force you out of here, drive you out. Speak now in the ears of the people, and let every man, not borrow, but ask of his neighbor, and every woman of her neighbor, jewels of silver and jewels of gold. And the Lord gave the... Now we have an insert, see? Let's follow this flow, okay? We have a flashback to Yahweh's promise, and then we have instruction about asking, okay? 11:2, instruction for asking valuables. And will you notice both the men and the women do it, okay? Then in 11:3, we have an insertion in the text by the author. We have a comment by the author. Okay, and what did the author say? And the Lord, Jehovah gave people in... And Jehovah gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Moreover, the man Moses was very great in the land of Egypt, in the sight of Pharaoh's servants, Notice this now. And in the sight of the people. So that is sort of an editorial comment, most likely by Moses when he's writing the book. And he is commenting about the positiveness of the people. That is, Egyptians were impressed. Okay? With two things. With Israel, and above all, with their leader, with Moses. And Moses gives credit to Jehovah for bringing that to pass. Apparently, you see, before the miracles or before the these plagues, this was not the case. And now it is the case. And so Moses says, this could only be from the hand of the Lord. And this then forms the basis, see, this is the basis of asking valuables. In other words, they did not have to have a knockdown, drag-out hassle with the Egyptians in order to get their valuables, as you would probably expect that they would have to have. The Egyptians were probably so much in awe and fear of another tragedy that they would do anything to get the Israelites out of the land. All of that change of attitude transfers between the first and the tenth plague. And how long they last, we don't know. Probably no more than a year, maybe no more than 9 months at a time. They're going to leave Egypt on the 14th day of Abib or Nisan, which is it's a lunar month, so it can either be late March or early April. And one of the plagues, the plague of the hail, had to come in January. So we know that from the hail, which was number 7 through number 10, you only had 3 months intervening. So the plague probably only lasted no more than 9 months, certainly no more than a year. And there's a total change of attitude on the part of the Egyptians to the Israelites. They want them to go. Okay? Okay, any questions about this so far? Yeah, question. Jerry? Yeah, we're coming to that in a minute. The reason verse 1 appears to be a flashback is that this plague is an interview. It's an interview. And the interview runs, I'll draw a line out here, right to here. Then we appear to have a flashback and with an editorial comment inserted. Okay? Then when you move down to number 4, the interview continues. The interview continues. Okay, so I have a different heading on this now. But if you're trying to capture the flow, this is the way I diagram. The interview runs down through 10:29. At 11:01, you have a flashback with an editorial comment. Then the interview apparently continues. Now, here's why it continues. When you get over to verse 9, in the next few verses, Moses is warning Pharaoh. So, we'll make that a separate point. At least that's the way I did it, if you want to do it in your notes like that. 11, 4 through 10, the last warning. The last warning to Pharaoh. Now, he gets a warning about this one. Now, remember, what one did he not get a warning on? I remember number 4 and number 5. I don't think he got a warning. I've been sick. Didn't get a warning on the darkness, number 9. There's about 3 that he doesn't get warning. He gets a warning now on the last one. And the 11th chapter concerns itself with that warning. Okay? Okay. And Moses said, thus saith the Lord, about midnight I will go out into the midst of Egypt. Now skip over to verse 8. You'll find out he's talking to Pharaoh. The last statement of verse 8, and he went out from Pharaoh in great anger. See, so he's still in his presence, apparently still in the context of the offer of the fourth plague. So Moses said, thus saith the Lord, about midnight will I go out into the midst of Egypt. So the first thing about this warning is the precise time of day. Okay? The time of last plague. Okay? Now, the King James, and practically every text, I think, translates this midnight. But the Hebrew actually says about the middle of the night. Now, really, that would make it about midnight because you're in the month Abib. You're almost at the equinox, Yes. Vernal equinox, spring equinox. Now, you're in April. So darkness usually comes about 6 o'clock, and daylight usually comes about 6 a.m. So midnight has to be real close, and it's a good translation. But the Hebrew simply says, about the middle of the night. But left open is what night? We're not told. Was it that night? No, it could have been that night. Because Israel had to wait till the 10th day of Abib. In other words, they had to go through all the instructions. They had to take a lamb on the 10th of Abib, watch it for 4 days, then sacrifice it on the 14th day of Abib, and then with all their clothes on and ready to leave town. So it couldn't have been this night. So Moses doesn't tell them what night. Now try to picture that. If you take seriously, if you were Pharaoh and you took seriously the warning of the 10th plague, that means every night you'd be expecting it to happen, and when it didn't happen, you would say, well, it isn't going to happen. And they said it was going to happen, but it isn't going to happen. Okay. So the timing, we know the time of the day, but we don't know which day. Okay. Verse 5, the nature of the plague. Nature. Now, this is catastrophic. This is devastating. And all the firstborn in the land of Egypt shall die, from the firstborn of Pharaoh that sitteth upon his throne, even to the firstborn of the maidservant that is behind the mill. That is, some very insignificant, trivial responsibility. If that person has a firstborn, all the firstborn is going to die. Moreover, all the firstborn of the beasts. So it is the death of the firstborn. The death of the firstborn. Okay? Now that means humans and animals. Okay, now, if the firstborn was the heir apparent, or he didn't state it here, did he, about the Pharaoh? Yes, he did. Yeah, I will go through. Did you notice that? Death of the firstborn, because I, Yahweh, will go through the land. And the idea is it'll be the presence of the God of Israel that will bring this to pass. That's stated in the latter part of verse 4. Now, if the firstborn of Pharaoh was a son, then that son was the heir apparent to the throne. And because, if the firstborn was a male, because he was the heir apparent, he was considered by the Egyptian people to be very unique. He was deity. He was a product of Osiris and Isis, actually, in combination with the queen mother. He was a male deity. Boy, what a cataclysmic judgment. And I've said this before, but I'll say it again. In the case of Pharaoh Amenhotep II, whom most conservatives feel was the Pharaoh of the Exodus, his firstborn did not succeed him to the throne. Okay? Next king is going to be Thothmes or Ptolemy the IV. Okay. Somebody asked last week, what boy, is liberals will ask the question, boy, is God the kind of God that goes around slaying children? The answer to that question is no, he's not. He really isn't. We've been told in Isaiah that judgment is, we're told that he shall perform a strange thing. References to God. And in the context, that reference is back to a judgment. It's a strange thing for Jehovah to perform a judgment like this. But the God that defines sin has a right to punish sin or a sinner any time that he chooses to punish them.